your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 42nd episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a great interview with Mike Morrissey, one of the creators behind Quarantined, a zombie book that came out in 2011 that I really liked. He's got another project in the works that I think you'll enjoy reading, and it's called Hoax Hunters. It's been a backup in another comic, and it's getting its own book, so you're going to want to learn more about it. Then I review this week's comics, and Ian Cullen and John Luca Glazer join me for this week's news and previews. And finally, I take a journey into your local comics store to see what's new. Since there's so much going on, let's get to it. I'm talking today with Mike Morrissey, who is the creator of Quarantined, one of my favorite zombie books of 2011. And you've got good news on that, I understand. You've also got a project coming out that you want people to know about. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Wayne. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
It's always good to have you on the podcast. So let's see. Quarantined came out as a trade paperback last year. And, of course, it was a different take on zombies, which I really liked. And I think it sold reasonably well. Do you have any update on that? And can you tell us what the future of Quarantined is?
Yeah, everyone involved was really happy with the success of the book. Marcosia, who was the publisher, Harry Marcos is the head guy over there, and he was pretty thrilled with how sales were. We had a good critical reception, and the fans who, you know, I've spoken to, read the book, have all responded positively to it. You know, I had a few bad reviews, and not like everything's completely perfect, but overall, the big picture, Quarantine was successful, so Marcosia has given us the okay to do more. And right now, the artist Monty Bohr is clearing off his plate. Since quarantine ended, he's had three projects back to back to back, so he's been a busy guy. So once he gets his plate cleared off, and he's closer getting his plate cleared off, him and I will sit down and talk and decide how we want to approach this. And I've got some scripts ready, and we'll talk to Marcosia, we'll talk to Harry, and see what we want to do, like maybe a little bit of digital releasing, another trade paperback. Depends. It depends on what the strengths of the book was with the original book and what's going to best suit it in this pretty crowded marketplace, how the best way to approach it is.
Yeah, because with the New 52 coming from DC, and then, of course, Marvel's got Avengers versus X-Men, so it's going to be somewhat crowded. Those two guys are going to be vying for as much as they can of the market share. But I hope that it'll come out. And do you have a preference? I mean, do you think that the digital is the way to go, or do you think another trade is the way that'll be best?
You know, I think a trade is. I think what worked for me, I think what my strength is going to conventions and going to shops, and I'm kind of a door-to-door, person-to-person type of salesman, if to put that in air quotes. If you're working in creator-owned comics, an aspect of your job has to be being a salesman and being a public relations specialist and things like that. So, like I was saying, part of my strength is just talking to shops and talking to fans and reaching them on that personal level. And you know, once I did that, it opened up a lot of doors for Quarantine, and you can't do that with digital. You can't have that personable interaction with digital that you have with an actual physical hard copy. I mean, granted, digital is a lot cheaper all around. The trade was a full color 160 page trade, and it was $20, but you know, you can go on Comixology right now and get all six issues that are in the trade for $6. And I understand that on an economic level, you know, it's cheaper for the fans, it's cheaper for Marcosia to produce. So there is definite benefits to digital. I believe the two work in concert with one another, but just for my own strengths, having that physical copy was important to the success of part one, and I don't see that changing, not if, but when we do the second installment.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you'll do it both ways rather than in either or.
Yeah, I think so. I'd like to find a way with our digital content to add a little, maybe something extra value added with our digital and with our print to do, you know, two different added extra things. We had some pages that weren't used in Quarantine, and I wish we would have found a way to add those into the digital somehow. We couldn't for the print. That book was stuffed. That was a big book. When you're doing print, you have to expand by multiples of eight, so we would have had to add eight pages on, and that just raises production costs and things like that. But yeah, I'd like to do both, and I'd like to find fun and attractive ways to add stuff to both. So I appreciate the readers who take the chance on my work, and I want to give them as much value for the money that they're spending as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that as a consumer, so that's great to hear that. As far as those people who may not have read Quarantined yet, do you want to give people sort of the overall view of the TV Guide view of what Quarantined is about?
Sure. Quarantine is, like you said, it's a zombie book. It works in the zombie genre. It's more the tradition of horror from mid to late 70s. A big inspiration of mine in the writing the book was John Carpenter. But the book is about a town in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Something happens. There's an outbreak. You discover what in the book, but there's an outbreak that turns people into zombie-like creatures, let's say. And the military shuts down the borders, and there's a band of survivors left within the town who have to survive against these zombies, survive against each other, and work to possibly find some way to rescue themselves from the town and rescue themselves from their own situations. Carpenter meets Brian Woods, DMZ. It has a little bit of a political, cultural bent to it, but it's also just that old school horror that I grew up on and I really, really love and admire. And yeah, I think that sums it up. It's hard to, I don't want to give away too much. I always feel like I'm giving away too, you know, too much with what I say. If you go to Comixology, there's a free preview that you can get there. I think it's the first 10 or 12 pages that you can download to whatever device you have, computer, iPad, whatever, and you can check it out there.
Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody wanted the full trade, can they go to Marcosia's website to get that?
They can go to Marcosia. It's sold out right now on Amazon. I know there's like some vendor selling new and used copies. There's a store in Chicago, Challengers Comics. I know they have a pretty good stock. I'm sure they'd be willing to ship Challengers Comics, also Third Coast Comics. Those two shops have been very good to me. And I know that they have stock on hand, so they'd be willing to ship some stuff out if someone's looking for it and can't find it. Contact them through their websites.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I enjoyed so much about Quarantined versus, say, The Walking Dead was that you actually explain what's going on and why the situation is what it is, where on Walking Dead, apparently we'll never know what that is. And so this is actually a part of the story. And for someone who always likes to know why things are the way they are, like me, that was a big deal. And so when I saw that, I went, oh, that's pretty interesting. I like that real well. So that's one of the things I encourage people to pick up the book, because you're going to get something that you probably aren't going to see in many other zombie books.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, and that was a big thing for me. I wanted to have a layer of mystery as well. I didn't want it to be straight survival fiction, which is a lot of zombie stories tend to be. And I love zombie stories for that. And when I was thinking out of how to do a zombie book in a crowded zombie market, I wanted to have something that separated, and that mystery was a big part of it. And yeah, I think it's only natural. I think people in that situation, as much as I enjoy Walking Dead, they sure gloss over conversations of people saying, what happened? You know, like no one seems to be really curious about how this catastrophe took place. And there's moments where people say that they know what happened, or there's speculation, but no one's really trying to get to the heart of it. That is a big part of what makes Quarantine tick, is, you know, trying to find out what exactly is going on and how they got to this place where they're at.
Now, I don't want to spoil too much on the second book, but can you give us like a little bit of an idea of what you're going to try to accomplish in the next set of stories from that?
Yeah, I have much of it already written, and what Quarantine 2 will be is it will be something totally different. I can say it begins in a very unexpected place. It's going to build on the mystery, things that we learned, you know, the nuggets that were developed in the first book, and taking them in a direction that I don't think people will see coming. I've talked a lot about Lost, and I love how Lost, every season of Lost started in this very jarring place. Season 2 starts where all of a sudden there's this guy working out on a treadmill, and he's eating his breakfast in this bunker, and you don't know what's going on. You don't realize till later that that's the hatch that they was blown off in season 1. So I like that sense of being jarred into really reintroducing readers to the story through shaking them up a little bit, shaking things up a little bit. And that's what's going to happen in Quarantine 2. Things are going to be shaken up a little bit, and we're going to dive deeper into what exactly was going on in the town and why this was caused and what it means to the characters that we came to know and hopefully enjoy in the first book.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait for it to come out. As soon as you know when this is going to start to happen, let me know, and I'm going to let everybody else know so they can get ready to pick up the second book.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, I will definitely let you know. Hopefully soon. Monty said in the next few weeks he should be getting cleared off. And, you know, it's tough when you work with such a good artist. Good artists are just, they're always busy. You know?
Right. Right. Now, the thing we really want to talk about, as great as Quarantined is, you have another project, and it's percolating right now pretty well. It's called Hoax Hunters, and I've read some of it. I haven't had a chance to catch up on everything, but why don't you go ahead and tell people what the story is on Hoax Hunters and what we're looking forward to?
Sure. The story of Hoax Hunters, it's done by myself and co-creator and co-writer Steve Seeley, and we like to think of it kind of like Mythbusters meets X-Files. which is a lot of fun to work in. But it's about this reality program called the Hoax Hunters. And what they do on their show is they go out and they approach certain hoaxes and myths and folklore and stuff like that. So, for instance, Chupacabra or Bigfoot, just riffing on these kind of shows that have become so popular in the last couple of years, Destination Truth, Finding Bigfoot, etc. So they go out and they approach these hoaxes and things like that. And they, like Mythbusters, show how they can't be true. They show how Bigfoot can't exist and the Montauk Monster is just a fabrication. Like, you know, Mythbusters will say, here's why this explosive doesn't work or whatever. But in reality, the Hoax Hunters are working for a certain organization, let's say, that is invested in keeping these truths hidden. You know, these things really exist in the world. Bigfoot is real. Chupacabra is real. Weird scientific anomalies really happen. You know, it's not just swamp gas. It's not just weather balloons, things like that. These things actually happen. And the Hoax Hunters reality show is a tool of people who have these interests in keeping that truth under wraps. The series started as a backup, 2 pages a month, in Tim Seeley's Hack Slash. Now, we ran for just under a year. Our run in Hack Slash ended in November. Mm-hmm. And we spoke to Image, and we had a good response to the series, even though it was just a small backup. We had a good response. People responded to the concept. They liked the story. They liked what we did with it. So Image has given us a shot, and we're deeply appreciative that they're taking a chance on the book. And we're getting all the backup material. The first thing we're doing is collecting all the backup material that was in Hack Slash, and that's being released as an issue zero on March 21st.
That was my first question, actually, was going to be, how do we catch up on where the story is before the full blow issue hits? So you've answered that. Now, issue number zero hits out in March. Mm-hmm. Now, as you were telling me before we started recording, people can order it now in the previews that is out this month. So if you're interested in it and you'd like to order it, the thing to do is go to your local comic store and let them know you want it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's such a big thing for creator-owned comics. I know people have been preaching this a lot lately. It's unfortunate because it can't be stressed enough that sales of your average creator-owned comic barely cover the cost of producing it. You know, that's sad reality. You know, people are doing creator-owned comics are doing it because they want to tell the story. And Steve and I, we just want to be able to sell enough so we are able to keep doing it. You know, but the way the economy is right now, it's hard for retailers to take a risk on a book that's not a proven commodity. Even though we're coming out of Hack Slash and even though we're with Image Comics, shops, they have difficulty ordering a lot of copies because, you know, if they don't sell them, that's just sunk cost for that. And that's sunk money that they've invested into it. Mm-hmm. So readers have to be able to tell them, yeah, I want to get Hoax Hunters, and they'll feel more confident ordering the book then and having it in their shop and knowing that they're not taking too much of an economic and financial risk and having it in their stores. So that's why it's so important for fans or potential readers to go to their shop and say, hey, have this in stock for me, please.
Because I go through two stores, actually, because one store will order things pretty much the way I want, and then I have like a backup in case they don't get it. Can I go through this other store? And it really works out well. I always have a situation where I tell them, I will buy what I order. And as long as you have a good record with the folks that you actually buy what you say you will, then they'll be glad to order stuff, no matter how obscure. And so I do that. I mean, I get stuff that nobody else in the world seems to know about, but they are very happy to order it because they know that I'll be glad to buy it. So, you know, do that. Go to your store, tell them that you want this, and I think that people will be pretty happy with what they've read. I love the whole notion that there are hoaxes out there that they actually want to be considered hoaxes, but they're actually real. I think that's such a great idea because I am a big fan of Bigfoot and Sasquatch, and I was watched Finding Bigfoot a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're so happy when they actually hear something that they can't explain, and they go, oh, wow. But, you know, what would they ever do if the Bigfoot walked into their camera? They'd be running as far as they can, throwing their camera equipment all over the place, scattering, trying to get away with them. So I like the concept of it, that we actually get to explore some of these concepts as if they were real. I really like that a lot.
Yeah, I do too. Steve and I are both big fans of conspiracies and cryptozoology and alien cover-up and things like that. That world of conspiracy is so rich, and that's what we really love about the concept, because it plays to things that we already love, and also because there's just so much. There's so much stuff out there that is just unexplainable phenomena. Like, yeah, sure, most of it's probably completely untrue and questionable sources and things like that, but not all of it. I mean, I can't imagine that all this stuff is all completely false. I would imagine there is some Hoax Hunters type manipulations out there, you know, that say, you know, like I said, like, that was just swamp gas. That's all, you know, like, and the concept plays to our strengths. And, you know, we have a lot of fun with it. We have a lot of fun with creating this world and doing cool and interesting things with it and building on this conspiracy and creating a mythology of our own along the way is what our ambition is.
No, you made me think of something when you were saying that. What would you ever do if somebody approached you and said, you know, you better stop publishing this book because it's too close to reality? What would you ever do? How would you respond to that?
I wouldn't be too surprised. I mean, I read some conspiracy message boards. There's like conspiracy message boards of anti-Mythbuster stuff. There's people who say, no, the Mythbusters are basically hoax hunters. For instance, they did that episode with the moon landing, how people say the moon landing is a hoax. Mm-hmm. And they showed all these different steps with the footprint and the mysterious rock and the way that gravity worked and all that stuff. They showed how that is actually how it would work on the moon. And there was all these stuff on message boards where they're like, no, the Mythbusters are wrong. Why are they doing it like this? Why are they doing it like that? They're obviously trying to keep the lie of man landing on the moon alive because they're doing this all the wrong way. If people really believe in conspiracies, man, you cannot tell them otherwise. You can just sit there and like present them with the hardest evidence in the world and they'll say, nope, I don't buy it.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if someone came up and said, like, this is true, this is real. They're like, yeah, maybe it is. Who knows?
What would be funny is it because now that we've set this premise up, they're probably going to want it to keep going just to keep it undercover. So we have to kind of, I think about these things. It just drives me crazy sometimes. I'm laying there going, what if this happened? What if that happened? So I do this all the time. So now issue number 0 is going to be out in March. Do you have plans for any issues beyond that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. We're almost done with issue number 1, and we're just waiting to see what happens with issue 0. Image is very excited about the book, and they like the book, and I think they like us. They seem to. I think they're just seeing what happens with issue number 0. I can't say anything for sure what's going to happen beyond that, beyond issue number 0 as of right now, because I think Image is waiting to see, again, going back to the sales thing, how sales are, what the response is, and then build on what happens with 0 to have a proper push for issue number 1, which would start a regular series. But one way or another, issue 1 and that next arc that Steve and I have written, the art is ready, almost done, like I said, with issue 1. That will come out one way or another. That will see the light of day. But it's just a matter of just finding the best way to do it. And we're following Image's lead, and I think that they know what they're doing. They have our best interest at heart, so we're just waiting to see what happens. The better issue 1 performs, that makes it all the easier for us to continue to do issue 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, etc.
One of the things that encourages me when I talk to you is you always have stories that go beyond a certain point. I mean, everybody in the world seems to write scripts or something like that, but I belong to a little club of writers, and we were writing, what if Star Trek was still going on? There's like fan films going on, and I have a script, actually, that I wrote, and I've also got a second one following up to that now. I thought the first one was great. I sat and came up with the concept with a couple of my friends for the second one. Now I'm in the middle of writing the second one, and I'm going, oh, man, I like the first one, but I like this one so much better. So we actually had so many things that we didn't put in the first script that we finally are getting to put in the second. So when I hear you talking about how you've got all these concepts and there's places to go beyond the first one, that encourages me, because oftentimes if you have one story and that's really all you've got, that usually means it's not really terribly thought through. So when I hear you talk about issues and storylines and places you can go afterwards, that makes me all the more interested in reading it.
Oh, thanks. I think that's a tendency of an imaginative creative mind. You get more excited. The more you build, the more exciting it gets. It's almost like you can't help yourself but be excited and think about, oh, man, what can I do next? And things like that. That's the fun of it. That's what I love doing. And yeah, the weird thing was that Steve and I worked 2 pages to 2 pages a month. And during that time, we just kept talking and building and building and building. And now we just have so much story, you know, like that we feel kind of boundless in the things that we are hoping to do. We were plotting it out a week or two ago, and we're like, man, we have like 2 to 3 years worth of story. Who knows if we'll be able to tell it, you know, but
isn't that funny?
I hope so. I sure hope so.
Yeah, me too, because I loved Quarantined, and what I've read of Hoax Hunters I really liked, and so I'm really anxious to get more into it. And I hope that everybody else will give it a good try and follow up on it, because it sounds like something that's really unusual in comics. I don't think there's anything like this elsewhere in comics.
I think the closest-ish thing would be like Planetary would be similar, but not really. I think there's some corollaries on TV with like Fringe and X-Files, but you know, comics is pretty unique, and I think it's also unique in saying that, you know, a lot of creator stuff, people want a miniseries, and I'm all for that, and I understand the economic necessity. Like I said, it's really hard to produce a creator-owned book, but we want to go on for years. Our ambition is just to keep going, and I think we have enough material in this universe and the mythology we're creating to keep it going, and yeah, we love to get that chance to do so.
Great, great. Well, I'm looking forward to it, especially after quarantine. I'm really excited about what kinds of things you come up with and how interesting they are. And I think you balance plot and character real well, which is something I don't think everybody can do all that well. So for me to be able to read that and enjoy the story story going along and see how that impacts the people, that's a great thing. Otherwise, it goes from video game to sort of sappy soap opera stuff. And so when somebody can hit that middle ground just right, I like that a lot. And I think you do that real well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'll admit that's probably the most important goal that I have in what I write. I want to have it be a good balance, good story, but if it's not grounded in strong characters that you can relate to and sympathize with to a degree and understand, I don't think the story works. You know, I think it has to have that human level, no matter how fantastic the story may be. Without that human level, it doesn't work for me. I'm glad you say that, and I really appreciate it, because that's the big goal when I sit down to write, is I always try to ground it in that way.
So as far as quarantine goes, what were those websites or the stores you said that have the trade if they wanted it?
I don't know their exact sites, but the stores are Third Coast Comics and Challenger. So I'm sure if you Google Third Coast Comics, Challenger's Comics, you'll find a website and you can contact the sites through there. And I'm sure they'll all be happy to help.
I guess depending on when they look at it, Amazon may or may not have it.
Yeah, Amazon, yeah, they might not. Depends on if things sell.
And Marcosia, they don't have them through their website currently?
I think they do. I think they do. I haven't checked their website in a while, but I believe that they do. The tricky thing with that is, though, they're in the UK. So if you're a U.S. customer, you'll get hit with a little extra shipping.
Yeah, and it'll take a little longer probably to get.
It'll take a little longer, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so as far as the digital version, you said Comixology?
Yeah, Comixology, Graphically, iComics, they all have the individual issues of quarantine there. They're 99 cents each. So take a chance, spend a buck, check out the first issue, or there's a free preview as well. So, you know, give it a shot, see if you like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really liked it, so I would encourage people to at least give it a try. I think you're probably hooked like I was on that, so I enjoyed that. So as far as Hoax Hunters goes, right now the thing to do is to go to your store and tell them you want the issue number 0 that's coming out in March.
Yeah, tell them that. There's a website, hoaxhunterscomic.blogspot.com, and we have previews on there, links to interviews. You'll have a link to this interview, promotional artwork that we did, insight into the book. So you can learn a lot more about Hoax Hunters and what exactly is going on with the comic. If you need just a little bit more in depth, and contact myself or Steve through there. So the website's a good place to go as well, just to round out what exactly you'd be getting into if you do buy the comic.
Well, you know, Mike, I really appreciate talking with you, and I'm really looking forward to both of these, quarantine going forward and also with Hoax Hunters going forward.
Thank you.
So it looks like fun stuff. I'm always looking for good quality stuff and variety, and I think that, you know, both of those books meet those needs if they scratch that itch that I have for that. So
yeah, I think it's an issue we all have, man. Storytellers and lovers of the form of the comics medium.
Yeah. Very true. Very true. Well, good luck with it. I hope you'll keep us updated, and we'll keep people aware of what they can do and how they can access those things. So it sounds great.
Well, great. Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Wayne. Thanks a lot for having me.
Same here. Well, hopefully we'll have you back again shortly.
Yeah, hopefully we'll have Quarantine 2 news come in, and Hoax Hunters becomes a huge success, and it'll be going for years.
Okay, well, you know, Hoax Hunters could go on television as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, man, I hope so.
It has that feel to it. If they'll do Fringe, and they'll do these other things. I don't see why they wouldn't do that. But, you know, I kind of like the stuff, so I'm a little biased, I imagine.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, Mike, and much success with it, and keep us up to date.
I will. Thank you, Wayne.
Thanks a lot.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands. And now, another exciting episode.
Let's take a look at the books that came out this week. The first book I want to be sure to mention is Lord of the Jungle, which is written by Arvid Nelson, who was on this very podcast last week. The first issue came out and was only $1 in the States, and it was a great issue. The art and the story were wonderful. There were multiple covers on it. It's based on Edgar Rice Burroughs' original tale, and the art is by Robert Castro. And of course, I mentioned the multiple covers. Alex Ross, Lucio Perillo, Ryan Sook, and Paul Renault were the cover artists. It's a great story. We get a lot of insight into who Tarzan is and his family, and the contrast between nature and humanity, and how both of them can be quite brutal when they want to be. It ends interestingly. It's a very good first issue. I highly recommend it. What a wonderful book. So be sure to get Lord of the Jungle number 1. Another book you should be getting is Batman. Batman number 5 was truly amazing. Batman's world literally turns upside down on him, and the interesting thing is the comic reflects that, and this really interesting battle with the Court of Owls is getting better and better. The cool part about the book is that it starts out regular format, and then it tilts 90 degrees so the artwork goes that direction, and then it tilts another 90 degrees until Batman's world is literally on its head. What a great book. Very creative, a lot of fun. I double checked to make sure that's not a printing error. That's the way they intended it to be. So if you want to get a really good creative book, Batman number 5. Next, I really enjoyed Nightwing with Kyle Higgins doing the writing. Dick Grayson's in way over his head with a sort of a supernatural villain, something a little different. Birds of Prey is in the middle of an interesting storyline that includes Batgirl. Then comes the Green Lantern Corps by Pete Tomasi as we continue to explore just what the Guardians have been doing all these years. Wonder Woman continues to delve into the gods of myth. Captain Atom is starting a story that deals with a being much like himself. Meanwhile, Supergirl learns more about her past while taking on a foe that's pretty comparable in power. Red Hood and the Outlaws was once again better than I expected, so I like that. Catwoman number 5 doesn't have any sex with Batman in it, and I'm sure some folks will be disappointed, but she ends up with a lot of money, and that's only the beginning of her troubles. The Legion of Superheroes has art by Walt Simonson, which is great fun to see. Blue Beetle has put his friend in a life-threatening situation, and the aliens that are originally after his armor have to take a detour, so that confrontation is delayed. DC Comics Presents is the conclusion of Dead Man's multi-part tale, and it's very good. I liked it pretty well. Next up is Challengers of the Unknown. Other books that are worth picking up this week besides those in the New 52 are Batman Odyssey Volume 2, number 4 of 7, Thunder Agents Volume 2, number 3 of 6, and Young Justice, number 12 from DC. Daredevil number 8 and Venom number 12 are from Marvel. The Great Book, which is a reprint, Steed and Mrs. Peel number 1 of 6, and Planet of the Apes number 10 are out from Boom Studios. Morning Glories number 15 and Near Death number 5 from Image, as well as Green Hornet number 21 from Dynamite. And those are the books that came out this week.
This is Dave, host of Megapodzilla,
the podcast equivalent to a 100-foot radioactive robot lizard,
but with horn-rimmed glasses and a pocket protector.
That's nerdy. We're on the rampage, laying waste to the geek landscape.
We'll talk movies, TV, comics, toys, video games.
And sometimes we talk turkey.
Don't you mean chicken?
That's right. So check us out at Megapodzilla.com.
We're also available on iTunes and the Zune Marketplace.
Aw, yeah.
Okay, it's time for this week's news and previews, and with me, as always, is Ian Cullen. How are you, Ian?
I'm good. I've got a little bit of a cold, but I should be okay to record.
Okay, and Gianluca Glazer. How are you, Gianluca?
I'm doing good. Okay. Sorry about that.
I heard a jingle. I was when your name is said, I hear music. So
okay. Yeah, unfortunately, somebody just knocked on my door. I'm sorry.
Oh, how handy. Good timing. But the first thing I want to do is the local Fox station here in the Washington, D.C. area decided for some strange reason it was time to take on DC Comics. They promptly did an interview with a reporter, was talking with a psychiatrist, and actually took comics and shoved them in front of the faces of kids so they could actually see these comics. And what they're referring to, of course, Catwoman number 1, Batman and Catwoman apparently have sex. And then, of course, there's all this bloody head lobbing going on, and which, of course, they thought was terrible for children to see. They interviewed a guy who's in charge of Big Planet Comics. Now, not Pete Casazza, who I normally talk with, who's in College Park. This was down in Virginia, the other side of D.C. But what I got a huge kick out of in a 3-minute and 40-second segment, they basically slashed at D.C. and said how terrible this was. I came up with a couple of questions, and a lot of people online had the same things who've seen it. You know, what is Wolverine
Wolverine got to do with it. I mean, Wolverine's been hacking and slashing people for decades, and that's not a big deal. But if Catwoman apparently gets it on one night with Batman, that's a huge deal. And also the head lobbings and stuff. Wolverine has dismembered people for decades, and that doesn't seem to be a problem. And also a lot of the women in Marvel and other books. I mean, it's not just Marvel that does this kind of stuff. There's a lot of brutal stuff going on in the comics because they're not children's medium so much. But what I got a huge kick out of was the lady who said that these shouldn't be put in the front of children's faces actually went to a school, and obviously, if you watch the video, she's across the street from the school, and the only reason they'll do that is because they won't let her in the school to do anything. So she must have had to go across the street and talk with parents. And the best part is she shoves this book in front of this one kid's face, and his response is, "Awesome!" Which killed me. I just laughed, and everybody I ask who's seen the interview is going like, what happened? What was this all about? Now, there's been a lot worse things going on in comics than these kinds of things if you want to go as far as violence and sex. But apparently that's what Fox wanted to do. And I sent around a link to you guys. I don't know if you guys had a chance to look at
actually,
it.
Actually, Wayne, it was actually me that sent the link to you.
Oh, was it? Okay. All right. So what did you guys think of it? Let's start with Ian. What did you think?
I just thought it was just a really stupid report. I mean, you may see it as I'm having to go to DC, which it probably is. But by the same token, I just thought it was really stupid. I felt that the whole report was just misrepresentative of the audience of comics. I mean, they're going around talking about Batman as if it was a kid's comic, as if it was something like age 7 and up. And they used the old 60s Adam West Batman series, which I hate to illustrate at that point. Whereas Batman, he's always been edgy. In the earlier incarnation, as in the first incarnation of Batman, he went around carrying a gun, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. It's always been gritty. It's always been edgy. And, you know, the Adam West series really totally dumbed him down for that era to make him accessible to kids. But as far as the comics are concerned, correct me if I'm wrong, but the comic book characters of DC have always been aimed at sort of like teenagers and above, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's basically true. Every comic company seems to have, except for like Marvel, has a kids line. I mean, Boom has Kaboom. You've got DC Comics has, like, they called it Johnny DC for a while, but it's clearly marked. This is a children's book. And if you go to stores, and the guy from Big Planet said this during the interview, was that, you know, they have a whole kids section, and it's usually right near the door, so they don't have to go past all the quote-unquote X-rated or R-rated stuff to get to it. It's right there, and this is what happens in these stores. You go to there, and that's the first thing you see are the children's comics. So that to me was just sort of silly. That part of the whole interview just made me laugh out loud. I think this was just, we need a segment. When you got 3 minutes and 40 seconds to do it, let's do it. So what do you think, John Luca?
It's local news. It's not like Fox News, the national channel. It's the Washington, D.C., Fox Channel 5. And even if it was Fox News, it just seems like journalism and comics is always kind of like an oxymoron. They don't research anything. They just take the biggest thing they can do is expose and just run with it. It's frustrating for people who actually have a bit of knowledge about comics just to see somebody who just knows nothing about it and go and spout off and try to create terror out of something. I mean, it's ridiculous. I would hate to imagine what Fox Channel 5 in Washington, D.C. would do if they accidentally discovered that there's a company called Avatar, you know, or a company called Broadsword. If they saw that, oh my goodness, you know, their heads would probably explode.
Yeah. Well, of course, a lot of people I'm reading online who had seen it, I said, why didn't they talk about anything else? Why was it only DC?
I know.
But, you know, the truth of the matter is somebody somehow apparently got them the information this was going on. And they also wondered why now. I mean, in the middle of January, the books they were referring to came out back in September. So why did they wait from September until January to decide to go after this stuff? So there's a lot of stuff in it that was just sort of silly. But, you know, I'm used to this sort of attack journalism that happens every once in a while with comics. So as far as that goes, it was what it was. It made everybody sort of laugh, and other people were sort of like astounded, and I said, you should watch it just for the humor of it. I don't think it was intentionally humorous, but it was unintentionally so.
To be fair though, Wayne, I do know an avid DC reader here in the UK who did actually find the scenes of nudity and sex between Batman and Catwoman in that first issue rather offensive. They'd preferred it to have been intimated and maybe suggested a little bit, but they kind of thought the nudity was going a little bit too far. They're a long-time fan of DC Comics. They're a big fan of Green Lantern, and they're a big fan of Batman and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they're trying to be edgy at this point. They're trying to get attention, and they certainly got that. So I don't think going forward we'll see as much of that. I think that was just to sort of say, look at me, but I don't think we'll see quite so much of that.
Yeah, I'm gonna buy that issue one. I'm just going to put it on a big poster on my wall, I think. Yeah.
That's what I figured. I figured, Ian, you'd like that better. Why don't you could ask him to give you that book?
Yeah, I might ask him to give it me.
Anyway, I think that's enough about that awful subject, but let's get on to the news. And why don't we start off, John Luca, why don't you go ahead and go first?
Oh, cool. A lot of cool, interesting stuff this week. Former DC Online VP Ron Peraza has joined Comixology as the Vice President, General Manager of Publishing and Creator Services. Mm-hmm. So Ron was behind the Zuda project, remember that,
mm-hmm.
a few years ago with DC?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good fit for him. So congratulations to that.
Mm-hmm.
The 23rd Annual GLAAD Media Awards has a comics nominations. They recently started doing this, I guess, like a couple of years ago, GLAAD dealing with gay and lesbians. So here's their list of nominees for comics. The Avengers, The Children's Crusade,
mm-hmm.
Batwoman, no big surprise there,
mm-hmm.
Secret Six by Gail Simone for DC,
mm-hmm.
Veronica Presents Kevin Killer, also not a big surprise there, and X-Factor from Marvel. So, interesting. Sadly, they left off Caligula from Avatar. You know, because there's definitely a lot of homosexuality and other things going on with that book.
Okay, Ian, you were going to say something?
I was just going to say X-Factor, not the TV show, but as soon as we're on the subject, I seen the first episode of Spartacus Vengeance a couple of years, and this is a totally unrelated notebook. Then again, they did do comics Spartacus seeing you on in the series, mm-hmm. but I didn't know that they had strap-ons back in Roman times. I found that really interesting to good.
Well, this is the television universe, so anything is possible. All right, Gianluca, why don't we go ahead to the next thing?
Sure. The Infinite is not infinite. It's very finite, and it's over. This is
really?
Yes, this is a comic series that Robert Kirkman was doing with Rob Liefeld that had me scratching my head last year. It's going to be released through Image Comics. I think it was announced at San Diego Comic-Con last year. But,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's apparently over, according to tweets by Robert Kirkman and Rob Liefeld.
Interesting.
Upcoming titles, some interesting news. I'm surprised this hasn't happened sooner, but Bart Simpson's pal, Milhouse, is getting his own comic book starting in April with issue one. And it's being co-written by Gail Simone. So, interesting stuff there.
Is it the last year of the season? Oh, is it the last season of The Simpsons or something now?
Not that we know of.
No, this is just dealing with a spin-off title with just Milhouse starring in it.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it... I think I heard something somewhere about this year actually being the final season of Simpsons on television.
I know there was like an issue maybe with pay or something like that with the voice actors, but I think everything's probably been worked out in regards to that.
Fox would be crazy to cancel that because their Sunday nights are completely anchored around that show, so I don't think you'll see that going anytime soon.
Sky One's completely anchored around that show. The show about 4 hours of it every night.
Ugh. It was funny the first season, but I don't think it's funny as nearly as much anymore.
Which one? The Simpsons?
Simpsons, yeah.
I loved like the first 10 or so seasons. It was just some brilliant stuff. I haven't really watched the last few years, to be perfectly honest, which is kind of sad. Moving on, IDW is going to be publishing a new Popeye comic book, also in April. It's going to be written by Roger Langridge, who did work on the Muppet Show comic for Boom Kids back in the day, a couple of years ago, as well as Snark for Kaboom. So he's going to be just the writer for that, and it's going to be illustrated by Bruce Ozella. So, interesting. Roger also does a lot of illustrating of his own work, too.
I'm actually a fan of Popeye. I love Popeye. I might have to try that.
All right. Well, Voltron sucks, but I'm hoping maybe this might be a better series. But Voltron is getting a spinoff from Dynamite in April also.
Wait a minute, who's getting a spinoff from Dynamite?
Voltron.
Oh, Voltron is, okay.
Yeah, Voltron, Defender of the Universe. Yeah, I was really disappointed with the first issue comic. But it did do well, and they are doing a spinoff series called Voltron Year One. It's going to be the same writer, Brandon Thomas, but it's going to have a different illustrator, so Craig Kermack. So hopefully, that was a big pet peeve with me, besides the story, but hopefully this will be much better. And the covers are by a couple of guys I know from Imaginary Friend Studios, Amira Wajaya and Jonathan Lau. Oh, interesting. Amira did like the first Hercules series for Radical when I was working there.
Wow, cool.
And in other news, let's see. That's it, basically.
Oh, okay. Okay, Ian, how about you?
Well, basically, that was a bit of news that I was going to go with. John Muth just followed then.
Sorry.
Oh. So that was it.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, then let's move on to the previews then. Ian, why don't you go ahead and talk about what books you're looking forward to this week?
Well, there's none coming out this week that I actually get, and I've only just got around to looking at the previews. But for you, Wayne, you got Batman Dark Knight coming out this week and Batman Beyond the Industrial Revolution trade paperback.
Mm-hmm. Actually, but one of the books, while we're talking about my stuff, the one of the books I'm looking forward to the most is a very expensive book. It's a $75
Whoa.
Hardcover edition of Hawkman, the Geoff Johns omnibus. Hawkman was in absolute array until Geoff Johns got a hold of him, and he suddenly made sense out of the whole, I mean, Hawk World and Hawkman and Earth 2 and all this other stuff. I mean, nobody had any idea who in the world Hawkman was. But Mr. Johns, he sorted that whole business out, and so I'm definitely looking forward to getting that hardcover of it. It's worth having.
Coming from IDW, John Luke, I don't think he was impressed with the first issue of this, but Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Ongoing comes out this week.
Yeah, it's been going on for a while.
And obviously Marksman issue 5 comes out this week.
Yes, it does.
And we've got the Mice Templar volume 3 coming out, which is a trade paperback, I think.
That is Mouse Guard Light.
So it's kind of like a rip-off of Mouse Guard.
Yeah, when Mouse Guard came out and was successful, suddenly out of nowhere, they discovered the Mice Templar. Yeah. So, unfortunately, Mice Templar is everything I hoped Mouse Guard would not do. They are standing upright mice who don't look at all like mice. They just have mice heads on their bodies. And they run around wearing, you know, medieval costumes and stuff like that. So, I would say if you want a really good comic by Mouse Guard, don't so much worry. Yeah, Archaea. Don't buy Mice Templar. I would say leave that one go.
Okay, well, Walking Dead 93 comes out this week as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we're getting down to Marvel Comics here, and we won't mention Marvel because with them being the best-selling comics of 2011, they don't need help.
Okay. All right, well, that's it's an in-joke. On the SciFiPulse.net, Nick Yanes, who is a comics columnist much like I am, posted a story about how Marvel was number one for the year of 2011 and that Image Comics was number one in trade paperbacks. Now, in my mind, that's not really news. That's been the case for years. I mean, as long as The Walking Dead's coming out from Image, trade paperbacks from Image will always be the top-selling. And Marvel, 3 months of DC's New 52, I didn't figure would knock Marvel off the pedestal. But I guess, you know, we want to make sure that people still know that Marvel's still number one and that Image is still number one. So, anyway, that's what that's
my view on that is 3 weeks of a DC 52 knocking Marvel off the top spot for 3 months has got to be a good thing, you know, mm-hmm. because it's good to sort of like drive Marvel to maybe release more new stuff and better quality stuff and vice versa.
Well, that's why Avengers and versus X-Men's coming. From what I'm hearing, there weren't necessarily plans for this until the New 52 hit. So that's all I think. I could be completely wrong on that. I don't know what Marvel's doing, but that's just kind of what's going on with that. Okay, John Luca, how about we find out what you're looking forward to this week?
Sure. There's a number of good titles coming out on January 25th. My Vampire number 5 comes out from DC by Joshua Helfiakov, and it's going to have like a Batman crossover with that. And I've noticed that with some of the lower-end DC 52 titles. OMAC, didn't it have a crossover with Frankenstein, Agent of Shade?
It did.
Yeah, and so they're kind of like mixing things around with there. So this one's going to be a Batman, iVampire crossover. Justice League Dark number 5 comes out. Looking forward to that, written by Peter Milligan. Already mentioned, but Marksman number 5 comes out from Image Comics. It's the second-to-last issue of the miniseries. Tom Coker does the cover, David Baxter is the writer, and you have Javier Aranda and Gary Leach doing the artwork. And it's a really cool world where economic collapse happens, and that's basically how the world goes to crap as opposed to war, alien invasions, or some stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Also from Image, Bulletproof Coffin Disinterred number 1 from David Hine and Shaky Kane. So this is like a second miniseries of Bulletproof Coffin, really good. First miniseries came out last year, or maybe the year before that, but really good. Definitely check it out if you've never heard about this before. From Boom Studios, from Boomtown, interested in seeing Too Much Coffee Man number 2 by Shannon Wheeler. Shannon Wheeler won the Eisner Awards, the most recent one, for his book I Thought You Would Be Funnier, which came out from Boom. But he's more well-known for his series Too Much Coffee Man, which also DC has a collection of. Finally, the last book that's interesting, and it is a bit pricey, but not like $85 pricey. It's depending what version you want to get of this book, but Romeo and Juliet the War from 1821 Comics. It's a fairly new publisher, and this is like their first release on their own. This book was promoted in previews as coming out in November, but that obviously didn't happen. They were going to do something at New York Comic Con with it, but I guess the book wasn't ready, and so it's been delayed, so it's finally coming out here at the end of January, in both a paperback and a hardcover edition. Paperback's $20, hardcover is like $30. And it's co-created by Stan Lee and Terry Dugas, who's the publisher for 1821. But it's written by Max Work. And the artwork is by another guy that used to be at Imaginary Friends Studios. His name is Scon Scherzusen. Probably totally mispronounced that. But he's from Singapore. He's a really brilliant artist. And he's really good if you can like look up some of the stuff that he creates. But it's a science fiction Romeo and Juliet story.
Ooh.
That's cool. Well, let me...
Sounds like you need a drink, John Mucha, to so I get that pronunciation right. So.
Oh, it's really bad. It's S-R-I-S-U-W-A-N is his last name. So, I mean, that's good luck pronouncing that. And it's Scan. I know that from just personally talking to him. Even though it's S-K-A-N, you would think Scan. No, it's not.
It's a three-liter bottle of vodka job, then, isn't it?
Yes. But it's really good artwork. I don't know how much the story is going to be, because, come on, I mean, we're talking about, like, Romeo and Juliet, the Montagues and the Capulets are this intergalactic force fighting each other. There's going to be cheesy dialogue, I'm sure. You know how the book ends, unless we decide to go with a happy ending. This classic.
Okay, well let me go ahead and jump into the ones that I want to talk about. There's a very important one, a book that I really loved is being collected in the hardcover this week, and that's Spontaneous, written by Joe Harris, and it's a wonderful comic. If you haven't read the comic, get the hardcover. It's about $24.99, and it's a great book. I loved reading the story. People are bursting into spontaneous flame in this town, and they have to go and discover what's going on. I love the story. I think it was a great, great, great story. I was kidding the author when he was on the podcast previously, because when I had Ghost Project, they had glow-in-the-dark covers, and so I, when I interviewed him, I said, are you going to have covers that burst into flame, you know, when you look at it, because it's spontaneous? And he wasn't sure what they were going to do, so now I want to see what they're going to do, so I can't wait to get my hands on the hardcover of that.
Oh, it's probably only press, but I was wondering if they were going to include the free Comic Book Day book that they did for that.
I hope so. I hope so. I think they will. Then we go up to, I'm going in kind of reverse order this time. I wanted to mention also the fact that you talked about Walking Dead and Marksman, both of which I highly recommend. I also wanted to talk a little bit about, there's several other things that are coming out, but I'm fascinated by the fact that Unwritten is coming out with issue number 33.5.
Oh, gosh.
And we've got all the Marvels have got the point ones, and I guess they decided to do the one better and do a point five issue, which I don't think I've ever seen before. I kind of gave up on Unwritten. It got real murky, and nothing was really happening for a long, long time, and so I gave up on it. But I'm fascinated by the 33.5. I wonder how that's going to work. Voodoo number five's out. Teen Titans number five. Superman Resurrection Man trade paperback is out. Legion Secret Origin number 4 of 6. Green Lantern New Guardians. Flash. Blackhawks, which is coming to an end. Batman The Dark Knight number 5, Aquaman number 5, which is another great one that I really like. So I think those are the ones that really deserve mentioning this week. Anything else that we got to talk about before we call it quits?
I certainly can't think of anything.
Okay, how about you, John?
Dreamweavers coming out next week also, number 3.
Let me look. That'll take a good look.
Let me see.
Yes, it is. You're right. Dreamweavers number 3 is out, which is a great one. I've read numbers 1 and 2, which are great. That's a hard book to find, unfortunately, but it's really good about teenagers who enter a dream world and they gain powers when they're in there, and they have to deal with a nightmare force. Really good story. Nicely done. Very diverse, if you're interested in diverse characters. So, yeah, Dreamweavers number 3 of 4. Thanks for that, John Lukak, for mentioning. Okay, and on that note, we come to a close with this week's news and previews. We'll talk with you again next week.
Woohoo! Yeah. I know we haven't been here for a while, but let's take a look inside your local comic store.
There's an Angry Birds Tiny Topper that's out for those people who like the video game. There's a Batgirl 3 symbol t-shirt, and apparently it's only available in XXL, which I guess says something about the people who have to want to wear it. There's a Captain America comic cover giant wall decal for $30. There are two Deadpool button sets from the character from Marvel. There's Doctor Who delete, delete, delete gray t-shirts in four sizes. There's also a Doctor Who Patrick Troughton signature statue, and it costs a little over $100, so you better pretty much like that. Also, a Doctor Who Red Dalek talking plush toy for about $30. So you probably ought to like all that good stuff. There's Harry Potter Hermione Gryffindor t-shirt in three different sizes. There are Hello Kitty Ramune Soda Strawberry offered again, and there's a Please Inquire, which means it's probably pretty expensive. There's a Jocasta statue from Marvel, and that's $200, and that's expensive. There's a Lord of the Rings War of the Ring board game, second edition, that's out. There are Marvel comic action figures, two packs. There's also Marvel erasers for Doctor Doom, and I don't know if he really has to erase very often, but I'm sure he'll need them. There's a Muppets Kermit laser cut keyring for about $3, so that's kind of a nice thing to get. There's Polaris statue for $225. She's from Marvel. Spider-Man comic cover giant wall decal, $30, just like Captain America. There's a Star Trek sticker set. There's also Star Wars Wrath of Darth Maul hardcover. There are Street Fighter wallets and t-shirts. There's Super Mario Brothers Bowser giant wall decal, a Mario Kart giant wall decal, and the Mario Kart wall decal. There's also Super Mario Brothers Mario Yoshi giant wall decal, as well as a couple of others from him. There's also Superman number one comic cover giant wall decal. This must be the week for those to come out. In addition to that, there's another comic wall decal from Superman. This one's the patriotic one. There's a Star Wars electronic blaster, 201-201, that's out. There's the Thor Modern Museum statue for $250. Better like that one. There's also X-Men Rockmaster electric guitar for about $200. There's also the X-Men comic cover giant wall decal. You won't see your wall by the time you get all these decals up on there. And the last thing I want to mention is there are Thundercats Look One Way t-shirts that are in like three sizes, or four sizes. So, and they're black, so I guess if you don't have to worry about getting stuff on them. And that's what's coming into your comic shop this week. And that's a wrap for the 42nd episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I've got many more good interviews coming in the future, so be sure to come back each week and listen. And also be sure to listen to the SFP Now podcast, on which I co-host. But until next week, keep reading your comics.
You'll never win, Joker. I'll always be here to stop you.